As you know, today is not only Veterans Day, but it's my proclamation that we are now going to be saying and calling Victory Day for World War I. Victory Day, you know, I was recently at an event and I saw France was celebrating Victory Day, but we didn't. And I saw France was celebrating another Victory Day for World War II. And other countries were celebrating. They were all celebrating. We're the one that won the wars. And I said, from now on, we're going to say Victory Day for World War I and World War II. And we could do for plenty of other wars, but we'll start with those two. Maybe someday somebody else will add a couple of more because we won a lot of good ones. But when I see other countries celebrating Victory Day, I watched it. I watched UK. I watched Russia. They were celebrating Victory Day, World War II. And I said, we got to have a Victory Day. Nobody even talked about it in our country. But from now on, we're going to be celebrating Victory Day for World War I, for World War II, and frankly, for everything else.
This is my video update on this Wednesday midday, November the 12th, coming to you from Larnaca, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news. And let's start things off with the Ukraine military collapse. In the Zaporozhye region, in an area called Guliapole, and this follows the Ukraine military collapse in the Kupiansk region, which is Kharkov, a Ukraine military collapse in Pokrovsk and Mirnograd, which is the Donetsk region. And then we move south to a Ukraine collapse, which is unfolding in the Zaporozhye region. This is the area that the Ukraine military, under the command of NATO and the United States from Germany, they were going to launch the 2023 super-duper summer counteroffensive that offended me and offended you and offended everybody. This is the region where we are now seeing the Ukraine military collapse. And we are seeing the Russian military advance from the very region that Ukraine was going to launch their big super duper summer counteroffensive. And they were going to make their way to the Sea of Azov. And they were going to get to Tokmak, if I remember correctly. And they were going to cut off Russia's land bridge. And this was going to lead to Russia's capitulation. But Ukraine only made it a couple of centimeters or a couple of inches advance. And that was it for the big super-duper summer counteroffensive, the Sudoviken line and all of that. Everything was run out of Germany. Why is Biden central command in Germany? And this was the great plan of the incredibly brilliant NATO commanders. And now we are seeing Russia advance in this area, and they are advancing not by inches, but by kilometers. And this is indeed a catastrophic situation that is unfolding in the Zaporozhye direction. And you're also going to have a situation which is going to develop in Kherson as well. Another catastrophe will develop in Kherson for the Ukraine military. How do I know that, you ask? Alex, how do you know this? Well, because Zelensky was in Kherson just yesterday. He paid a visit to Kherson. He posted a video from Kherson. And we know that when Zelensky visits a region and he does one of his TikTok, Instagram videos from that region in front of the city or the region sign, in this instance, Kherson, then you know that the region or the city is going to be captured by Russia sooner or later. So the very anti-Russian, very, very pro, super-duper, uber-pro X account of Nexta. They are posting, the front in Zaporozhye direction is collapsing. Russian forces have broken through Ukrainian defenses in eastern Zaporozhye Oblast and advanced toward Khuliapole, according to OSINT channels. The Deep State Project reports that a breakthrough near the Yachur River allowed Russian troops to advance from the northeast, creating a threat of partial encirclement of the city. In recent weeks, Russian forces have captured dozens of square kilometers, including the villages of Slatke, Novoye, and Novonikolaevka, and begun fighting in Rovnopol, just 11 kilometers from Khuliapole. Experts describe the situation as a localized collapse of defenses. Russian troops are advancing 4 to 5 kilometers every few days, while Ukrainian forces struggle to fortify new positions. Military analysts warn that if this pace continues, the city could be encircled or captured within 2 weeks. Now, on the Duran, we did a video with Scott from Calibrated, the excellent YouTube channel and X account from Scott from Calibrated. The X account has the handle of Aiden. And we went over the situation on the front line. And of course, we paid a lot of attention to what is unfolding in Pokrovsk. And Scott had the maps, and he was going over the situation from Pokrovsk because there is a lot of attention being paid to Pokrovsk, rightly so. And the media is focusing on Pokrovsk. But Scott also did a very thorough, a very good breakdown on the situation in Zaporozhye. And he called it 2-3 days ago that this area is going to collapse. And sure enough, it has collapsed. So definitely check out the video on the Duran with Scott from Calibrated. And we have all the maps, and Scott has all the maps, and he goes through the entire situation, not only in Pokrovsk, but also in Zaporozhye and Khuliapole. And that was two, 3 days ago. And here we are with the Deep State Mapping project, which is also very, very pro-Ukrainian. They are now saying that this area is collapsing. And in the next post, they actually say Khuliapole, once home to 13,000 people, remains a strategically important crossroads in eastern Ukraine. Remember that. Remember that. That sentence from the very pro-Alensky Nexta. Khuliapole remains a strategically important crossroads in eastern Ukraine, because when the Russians capture Khuliapole, or are about to capture Khuliapole and have it encircled, trapped in a cauldron, you can bet that the pro-Ukrainian channels and the Alensky regime, the collective West, they are going to come out with the narrative that Khuliapole is not strategically important. So remember that sentence from Nexta, not from me, from Nexta. Khuliapole remains a strategically important crossroads in eastern Ukraine. In about 2 to 4 weeks or 2 months or however long it takes, the narrative is going to be Khuliapole is really not that strategically important. It's just a propaganda win for Putin. The price that the Russian military paid in order to encircle Khuliapole was huge. And that is going to be the narrative that we're going to hear in the next 2 weeks to 1 to 2 months. So that is the situation on the front line. It is a catastrophe from Kharkov all the way to Zaporozhye, and soon in Kherson as well. The very smart, some would say genius, the genius mayor of Kiev, Klitschko, who was also a very talented heavyweight boxer. That is true. He was a very talented, very successful heavyweight boxer. The genius part, that is a bit of sarcasm, but he said in an interview with Collective West Media that that Ukraine is facing huge problems mobilizing, huge problems finding soldiers. And his suggestion is that the mobilization age be lowered. Right now it is at 25, it remains at 25, and he would like it lowered to 24, or 23, or even lower than that. Ukraine faces huge problems finding soldiers as men flee abroad, says Kiev mayor. And in this interview, Klitschko talks about how Russia keeps on advancing as if it was a video game. That's actually the words that he uses. It's like a video game, according to Mayor Klitschko. And he parrots in this interview the narrative that no matter how many soldiers the Ukraine military annihilates, Russia just keeps on sending more and more soldiers to the front lines. And and the main point of this interview from Klitschko is for him to throw out the proposition that the Zelensky regime, to pressure the Zelensky regime into lowering the mobilization age. That is the real point of this interview. The latest prisoner exchange that happened, or actually the fallen soldier exchange that happened a couple of weeks ago. Once again, the Russian military, they handed over 1,000 Ukrainian soldiers, fallen soldiers, and Ukraine handed over, I believe the number was 31 fallen Russian soldiers. And that was about a week or two ago. So they keep on repeating this narrative of Russia paying a very heavy price as they advance. The human wave tactic. They keep on throwing out this Western media narrative that they've constructed. But the real point of what Klitschko had to say in this interview was to put pressure on Zelensky to lower the conscription age from 25 to 24, or 23, or 22. Because Ukraine just doesn't have any men anymore to hold the front line. And we see Syrsky trying to hold on to Pokrovsk by removing soldiers positioned in Zaporozhye. And then you have a Zaporozhye collapse. And then he tries to hold on to Zaporozhye by moving soldiers from Kupiansk. And then you have the Russian advance at Kupiansk and so on and so forth, right? He just keeps on trying to plug up holes as the Russians continue to advance, because the Ukraine military has been attrited, right? Is that the correct word? Attrited? The attrition warfare for the Russians is starting to show. The last 3 years of this attrition warfare strategy is now actually starting to manifest itself on the front lines. So that's Klitschko urging, pressuring the Zelensky regime to lower the conscription age. In the past, 18-year-olds served in the army, but those are kids, he said. Right now, you can only be mobilized in Ukraine from age 25. You could lower it by a year or two to 23 or 22. That's Klitschko to the last Ukrainian, the mayor of Kiev, right? Just keep on fighting. Keep on fighting. And if we have to lower the mobilization age, let's lower it, because we have to keep the war going. And the EU is trying to keep the war going. NATO is desperate to keep the war going. And behind both of these organizations is the United States, right? Desperate to keep the war going. And the reason they want to keep the war going and they want Russia to remain engaged in the conflict in Ukraine is because they would like the European Union to eventually go to war with Russia in 3 to 4 years time. I've actually talked about this in many videos. We've talked about this on the Duran. Brian Berletic has also talked about this on his channel. The Duran with Brian Berletic, we have talked about this as well. The collective West, they would like the conflict to drag on in Ukraine for at least four years, if they can, because they want to inflict as much of damage on Russia as they can, and they want to keep Russia occupied in Ukraine, because in 3-4 years, their hopes is that they will build a strong enough EU NATO military that they will then be able to engage in some sort of a conflict with Russia. And this is exactly what Orbán has been saying. Orbán has been saying that Europe is on a war footing, and they are looking to get some sort of war going with Russia in 3-4 years. And Serbia's president, Vucic, actually said the same thing yesterday in an interview he gave to Pink TV. Vucic said, and I quote, "As I analyze the facts, I come to the conclusion that a war between Europe and Russia is becoming increasingly apparent. This is not empty talk. Everyone is preparing for it." And Vucic talks about how Serbia is in a difficult situation, between a rock and a hard place, is what he said, trying to balance its position, its geography in Europe, its relationship with the West and the EU, and surrounded by NATO, but also its very good brotherly relations with Russia. So that was the statement from Vucic, which echoes the many statements from Orbán and Fico as well, who claim that they have, who do sit in the meetings in Brussels. They are part of the meetings in Brussels, and their statements are that during these meetings, all the European leaders talk about, and all the technocrats and kleptocrats in Brussels talk about, is preparing for a war with Russia, and that Ukraine needs to continue to fight Russia for the next 3-4 years in order to give Europe, the EU, time to build up its military so that they can get another crack at defeating Russia in some sort of a conflict. It's all nuts. It is all crazy. And a lot of it is grift and creating military slush funds. But the drift towards conflict is real. Even if much of this is about money and MIC money, eventually it does turn into a real conflict. And Politico is reporting that Germany is rearming. It is rearming big time, or at least is trying to rearm big time. It is taking on debt and spending a lot of money, or planning to spend a lot of money in order to build the biggest military in all of Europe. Germany's rearmament upends Europe's power balance, as Berlin again becomes Europe's leading military power. Paris and Warsaw face a massive political shift. And the article talks about how the EU, when it was formed, the deal in Europe under the EU was that Germany would be the financial power and France would be the military power. But now it looks like Germany, given France's financial difficulties and its degrading military situation, Germany is positioning itself to take on debt, because it can take on debt. It's still in a position to take on debt and to spend money to become the military power in Europe, taking the position over from France and this worries France. And it also talks about how Germany's focus on building a huge military is also worrying Poland, and officials in Poland are trying to figure out what to do. And some officials in Poland are saying that Poland should enter into some sort of an alliance with Germany. Oh, the whole thing is just such a bad idea. It is all such a freaking bad idea, but there you are. This is where Europe finds itself. The UK, they have decided to say no to the EU's safe defense fund, the fund that consists of 150 billion euros, and it's part of a larger 800 billion euro Ursula fund. Ursula loves her funds. She's so good at creating these funds. Well, the safe fund was open to countries, is open to countries outside of the European Union, and the UK and Canada were invited to join the safe fund. And for the moment, the UK is refusing. And the reason they're refusing is because in order to join this defense fund, you have to pay into it. And the price of admission was or is between 4 and 6.5 billion euros. It's the Security Action for Europe Fund, the safe fund. And the UK, they thought this was too high of an admission price, and so they're renegotiating the entry fee. And once you gain access into the safe fund, then the EU, they take on loans, they take on debt, they issue bonds, whatever, they take on debt. And they also take these membership fees from the UK or Canada or any other countries that pay into this 150 billion fund. They raise the 150 billion, right? From the entry fees, from taking on debt, they create the 150 billion fund. And with that money, they invest in the MIC. They build drones, they build missiles. And then the countries that are part of the safe fund, they can get low interest loans from the EU so that they can purchase the weapons that were created by this fund, or the money that this fund gave to the MIC to create those weapons. Then the countries that are part of this club, they can purchase the weapons with the low interest EU loan. It is all one big freaking grift, man. when I read about how this thing works, and I kind of got an understanding as to how Ursula has put this safe fund together. Oh man, the only word that came to mind was grift, man. That's what came to mind, grift. So the UK, I think the UK will eventually negotiate a lower price to enter this club. Instead of 4 billion, it'll be 3 billion. The UK will pay into it. And then eventually it will take out low interest rate loans from the European Union. And with those loans, it'll purchase weapons. By the way, as it purchases weapons from this safe fund, it can then sell those weapons further down the line to say Ukraine, right? That's the whole plan. So the UK, they purchase the weapons, and then they sell the weapons to Ukraine, and the money just goes round and round and round. Oh man. So Romania and Bulgaria, they are scrambling for a way to deal with the Russian oil sanctions from U.S. President Trump. They are scrambling, and they have a month, right? No, they have 10 days. They have 10 days, actually, November 21st, but Bulgaria has a month. That's what it is. They have 10 days, less than 10 days, to figure out the Luke oil Russian sanctions, Rosneft Luke oil sanctions that the Trump White House imposed. But Bulgaria, according to Reuters, they have just 1 month of gasoline. That's it. 1 month of gasoline and about 45 days of diesel or the other way around. 1 month of diesel and 45 days of gas. But either way, it is a very, very bad situation for Bulgaria, as well as Romania. And they are exploring. They are exploring exemptions from the Trump administration in much the same way that that Orban successfully did in his trip to the White House, even though Trump said that he gave an exemption to Hungary, to Orban, because of its geography being landlocked. And he said he's not going to extend exemptions to countries that are not landlocked. But Romania and Bulgaria are working on getting some sort of Trump exemption. And the nuclear option is to nationalize these facilities and refineries, these Luke oil connected facilities and refineries, to nationalize them. But the situation is very bad, especially for Bulgaria. Time is a ticking. But you know, I thought this is what they wanted, right? I thought this is what the EU and Europe and Bulgaria and Romania and Ursula and stunning and brave Kaya Kallas, I thought this is exactly what they wanted, to be rid of any Russian-connected oil and gas and energy. This was the plan, wasn't it? Even if the countries have to suffer, even if the citizens of those countries have to suffer, and even if they have no more gas, petrol, diesel, according to Ursula and to Kaya Kallas, it's worth it. That's what they've been telling us. It's worth it, because we are going to be hurting Putin's war machine. Tatters, Ursula said. So that's the situation in Bulgaria and in Romania. Let's now shift gears and talk about what is happening in Venezuela. Not much talk about Venezuela over the past week, huh? But things are moving in Venezuela, even though the Trump White House is not talking about Venezuela, which is a very bad sign, in my opinion, when the Trump White House goes quiet, when Trump goes quiet on Truth Social for a couple of days. That could be a signal of some trickery that's about to unfold, some sort of operation, military operation trickery. But we are getting reports from CNN that the USS carrier group, the Ford carrier group, is in the region. Last I reported, it was reported that the Ford had stopped around Morocco, but now we are getting reports from CNN that the Ford has made its way to the region. And CNN is also reporting that Venezuela is announcing a big mobilization effort and military exercises, as well as Maduro prepares for what could be some sort of U.S. military operation against Venezuela. CNN reports Venezuela announces massive mobilization of military forces as America's largest warship sails into the region. The move comes amid increasing tension between the two countries as the U.S. buildup continues. On Tuesday, the U.S. Navy announced the aircraft carrier USS Gerald R. Ford, America's largest warship, had arrived in the U.S. Southern Command area of operations, which includes most of Latin America. So we also got reports yesterday that that the UK has suspended some intelligence sharing with the US over the US boat strikes, which the UK says is illegal. And so they have decided to suspend some, not all, of the intelligence sharing that, according to UK officials, helps the Department of War to strike at these alleged narco-terrorist boats. Colombia has also suspended any intelligence sharing with the U.S. as well. So Colombia suspending intelligence sharing, absolutely expected. I'm surprised that they didn't suspend any intelligence sooner. But the UK suspending intelligence sharing, that's an interesting one, or some intelligence sharing. The European Union, they are going to go after Chinese mobile network hardware. They did not learn from their experience with Nexperia and chips. Nope, the EU has not learned from all of that. And the European Union is now going to prohibit mobile networks in the EU from using any Chinese hardware. That's right, no Chinese hardware, according to Bloomberg, in mobile networks in the European Union. The John Calvin Center, the International Evangelical Church. Services in English from 10:30 to 6 p.m. So let's go straight and turn left, if we can turn left somewhere. So yeah, that's going to backfire against against the European Union in a big way. You think China's going to retaliate to this? Yeah, I think China's going to retaliate to this. Right now, they've left it to the member states, the EU, as to whether they want to use any Chinese hardware in their mobile networks. And it's been the choice of member states. But the EU is going to make it so that it will be prohibited to use any Chinese hardware. And if you are caught using Chinese hardware, then you're going to pay a fine or penalties. Let's see. Under the proposal, European Commission Vice President Helena Virkkunen seeks to turn a 2020 recommendation on excluding high-risk vendors from mobile networks into a binding legal requirement, sources told Bloomberg. If adopted, the rule would apply to mobile network gear and fixed line infrastructure, as Virkkunen is said to be examining options to limit the use of Chinese equipment in fiber optic and broadband expansions. The commission also reportedly plans to urge non-EU countries to join the ban, forming the broader coalition against Chinese telecom suppliers. The coalition of the willing. Yes, the EU is going to look to expand this blocking of Chinese hardware in mobile networks. Expand it beyond the European Union member states. They're going to build a coalition of the willing. Oh my God. I can't wait to see how China retaliates to this move from the European Union, and how quickly the EU is going to walk this back. that's what I'm waiting for. Anyway, let's stick with the EU and China for today's Clown World. For today's clown world, we have EU member state Estonia issuing an ultimatum to China. That's right, Estonia has issued an ultimatum to China. So the Baltic states, man, what did I say a couple of days ago? What did I say about the Baltic states? They are making a big push to win the Clown World of the Year award. The Baltic states as a whole, right? They're working together to win the Clown World of the Year. Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia. It's a group effort. It's a group effort. So the foreign ministers of Estonia and of China, they met a couple of days ago. I believe they met in China, in Beijing, if I'm not mistaken. And Estonia issued an ultimatum to China. That's right. They said, stop supporting Russia or else. Stop supporting Russia or else. The wrath of Estonia. If Beijing wants to maintain good relations with the Estonian side, it must stop supporting Russia, said the Estonian foreign minister. Word is that that China, the Chinese foreign ministry, has already rejected. They have already rejected Estonia's ultimatum. Go figure. Oh man, they rejected Estonia's ultimatum, the Chinese foreign ministry. That's a bad move, man. That is a bad move. If there's one country you do not want to piss off, it's Estonia, man. Look, I think this is a game changer. My analysis of this is that we're looking at a game-changing geopolitical moment. Estonia issuing an ultimatum and China rejecting it will pretty much mean the collapse of China as we know it. Yeah, it will mean the collapse of China, because Estonia will start to place sanctions. It will start to put pressure on China, maybe even military pressure. It may actually isolate China as well. And before you know it, militarily isolate China, economically isolate China, and before you know it, Xi Jinping's government is going to collapse. You're going to see chaos in the streets, and that's it. That is it. So, you know, China should have, it should have accepted Estonia's ultimatum, right? Should have capitulated. Should have sat down with Estonia and signed the capitulation documents and stopped supporting Russia, and that would have been it. But nope, they've decided to reject Estonia's ultimatum. Big trouble for China, everybody. Really, really big trouble for China. Oh man, the wrath of Estonia is coming. So Lavrov, he actually talked about this in an interview he gave to the TASS news agency and various other reporters. Lavrov is back. He is back. He's giving a lot of interviews. Go figure. And Lavrov actually talked about the Baltic states. And he said to reporters that the Baltic countries are pawns in a British game. That is what Lavrov said. They are pawns in a British game. And the reason why you have the Baltic states in NATO and in the EU is so that they can stir up trouble on behalf of the British. He doesn't mention the US. Lavrov is very careful still to not mention the US. He's focused on the UK. He said, the few in Europe who still have a shred of common sense and indeed care about the continent's security, and there are fewer and fewer of those, they understand perfectly well which provocative role was given to these Baltic countries, spearheaded by the British. That's the statement coming from Russia's foreign minister. Lavrov also said in this interview that the U.S. should fight drugs in the EU narco state of Belgium instead of Venezuela. He actually said that. Why Belgium? Why Belgium, you may ask? Because that's what I was wondering. Why did he bring up Belgium as a narco state? And the reason he brought it up is because there was a judge in Belgium who actually described the country as a narco state. And that's why Lavrov is saying, you know what, maybe Trump should focus on fighting drugs in the EU and in Belgium rather than Venezuela. Here's what Lavrov said. Rather than targeting Nigeria and Venezuela with anti-drug operations and seizures of oil fields, the U.S. should probably focus on eradicating this social ill in Belgium, Lavrov said. The U.S. already has troops there and will not have to chase after small boats with crews of three people each. Lavrov was referring to a recent statement by a Belgium judge who wrote to the parliament that mafia-like structures have taken root in the country and that it is not an exaggeration to say we are evolving into a narco state. So that's why Lavrov brought up the EU and Belgium instead of Venezuela and Nigeria. Instead of Venezuela and Nigeria, perhaps the United States should focus on the EU. So he did bring up the United States. So he did bring up the United States and focused on the U.S. a little bit. And what else did Lavrov say? He also urges the Trump White House to take up Putin's offer on renegotiating the New START treaty. He said that in the past, the United States decided to renegotiate the New START treaty a couple of days before it expired. So he said it's not too late for the Trump administration. It's never too late, or at least not until February when it expires. It has all the way up until February to decide to renegotiate the New START treaty. He said that Russia is absolutely ready up until February, up until the last day, the last minute, for the Trump White House to agree to renegotiate the New START treaty. And it absolutely should do this for the entire world. It should renegotiate for the safety, the well-being of the entire world. It should renegotiate the New START treaty. And finally, Trump also, he went after the BBC as well. He said that the BBC, attempting to defend the BBC, he said, is a disgrace. Attempts to defend the BBC are a disgrace, according to Lavrov. He said the BBC is unprofessional and harmful. And he is referencing the latest news on the BBC that it doctored the Trump speech on January 6th. And Trump is now angry with the BBC and he has a lawsuit against the BBC. So Lavrov weighed in. And he said, yeah, the BBC's been doing this to Russia for a long time as well, and trying to defend the BBC, disgraceful, and they are absolutely unprofessional. Anyway, we got through a lot of news today. That is the video. Like this channel. Share. I don't know. Who do you think I am? You know, huh?
I watched Big Ten.
Oh, cool, man. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
I'm wrapping up my video right now.
You constantly live here or you're traveling now?
I come and go. Ah, I come and go. Nice. Where are you from?
Romania.
From Romania?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, on. Bucharest?
No, Cluj. No. Somewhere in the north.
All right.
Where we have a certain opinion on the things you talk about, but nobody asks the normal people.
Like, yeah, they don't ask, huh?
Yeah, it's not in the interest of the government, is it?
It's no, never like no, it's that. Not. It's never.
No,
it's never like that.
We live in a really weird world where, I think Western leaders have gone
crazy,
bonkers.
Yeah. By the way, your voice. I'm not filming you, but your voice. Is it okay if it's on here?
Yeah,
your voice, not you.
Yeah,
okay, cool.
I have a nice voice.
All right.
Yeah. So it's interesting because I always thought about this subject as we only need like one missile to fall and all. Thing fall apart, and I'm not talking about
that.
It changes our whole way of living, and I'm wondering why nobody sees that.
Right? And you guys are right on the front. You guys are right there.
I mean, my great grandfather tried to conquer Russia. He didn't end up well, right? this is how it is.
What's the vibe? So in Romania, you would say that most of the population, the people, just want the war to end?
I think wants the war to end, but I think it's really easy to get people hyped up, right, with propaganda and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, we live in a propaganda state, the entire Europe, I think. But it's weird that nobody seems to think that we had COVID, right? Mm-hmm. Which wasn't a major nuisance, but it changed the way things operated. Yeah. I mean, nobody wonders what would happen if you had, like, because I don't think it's a case of Russia trying to get all the way to Romania and stuff. But I think when you're living, like, waiting for missiles to fall, it's not a pretty life to have. Like, it's weird for me. Even mature people don't really think about it. I think my grandparents, they remember the war, the Second World War, and they're a bit more calm on this subject.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's weird. I mean, for me, there's an entire talk about Russia, dictatorship and everything, right? But I mean, for me, it was always like the West and the East always tried. It was like a conflict managed, right? We constantly had to manage, and now for some reason we're trying to go to war.
For some reason. I think we know what the reasons are. Yeah,
I mean, yeah,
we know what the reasons are, but yeah.
It's weird because I'm on the extreme end, so I watch your channel, and then I also have to watch DW and everything.
Good.
To also have the other extreme.
Good, good.
And it's weird that we're now living in such two separated worlds that if you're a normal human being, you must be wondering, like, what's going on, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I would say that we're not extreme. I would say that we're realistic.
I mean,
the two sides, yeah.
Yeah,
the two sides, yeah.
It's, for me, it's good. I get annoyed watching DW because it's propaganda and I can spot it quite easily. But most of my friends and everybody, they think it's the... But you should cover the election in Romania. We had a nice election.
Yes, yes. Hopefully I'll be in Bucharest soon.
Nice
I'm hoping.
Place.
I've been
it's
to Bucharest nice many place. Times. I love Romania. It's a cool,
it's,
cool
it's
place
a
to
place
be.
Like everywhere, good
yeah.
people.
Yeah, good
people. Right?
Yeah, that's yeah, good people. It's a good city because it's a walking city.
Yeah,
you get around easily, and it's a nice place.
People are friendly. I mean,
people are friendly.
Really,
yeah,
let's say safe.
Yeah,
and it would be a pity to spoil it, right? We don't have like all the migration issues and everything. So we're kind of safe on that front.
Yeah.
I don't know why you said it, but I think it's only like the major politicians, like the weird president we have now, which is not a bad person, but he's infantile, right? So,
Mr. Dan, Nicușor Dan, yeah.
Exactly. We call him Nicușor,
which
is like an abbreviation. It's not like, it's like you'd be child and childish, right?
Yeah.
So Nicu is the name, and making it sound more childish is Nicușor.
Yeah, well, we covered those elections a lot, and... Our position on those elections was pretty clear.
I mean, I
think the whole world was a bit shocked.
It doesn't even matter on which spectrum you are politically. I guess having a fair election, even the other guy's done.
I agree. That's not the point. Yeah, you're right. It wasn't the point.
Yeah.
Left, right, or anything like that.
Course.
It was the
people who
voted for the other guy.
They had a really good intent, and they didn't vote for that guy because they wanted that guy to lead them. They were just tired of everyone else.
Yeah.
So that's what happens when you have bad politicians. Because the other guy was only valuable because the others was so bad. Right?
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. To
yeah.
Who knows?
Like a protest vote.
Yeah.
Cool.
It was good to meet you.
Good to meet you. What's your name?
Paul.
Paul. Good to meet you, Paul. How long are you in Cyprus for?
Unfortunately, for other 3 days.
All right, man. You like it, though. It's good, right? Awesome. Awesome. Take care, man. All right. Let's wrap up the video. Like, share, subscribe, and I will see everybody tomorrow. Rumble X Telegram, that's where you can follow me. It's in the description box down below. Take care.